Expat Files with John Mueller, Mondays and Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Progressive Radio Network.
South of the border, down Mexico way, that's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the one-of-a-kind show that tells you what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. So let's get started.
She was a picture in old Spanish lace.
You know, when talking about the price of gas down here, now that in most places it's hit $4 and it's heading toward $5, well, you're starting to see a few strange things. Like, for example, lately when I've gone to the gas station and filled up, I've seen the luxury vehicles, I mean the Mercedes and the BMWs and Audis and even in the cars that the bodyguards are driving. Well, suddenly, I'm in a self-serve line, as usual, because I'm a little on the cheap side. You know, you pay a couple of cents less per gallon that way, right? And for that matter, every other expat I know seems to pump his own gas too. Anyway, right behind me and in front of me, I'm suddenly seeing these luxury car owners and their bodyguards filling up to save a few cents per gallon themselves. Looks like things are getting rough even for the Latin jet set. And even women are now lining up in the self-serve line. And just a year or so ago, I never saw that. And now even these upper-class Latin women who used to sit so queenly in their cars, the same women that used to order the lowly gas station attendant around, these same ladies with the $200 designer jeans and the $300 Blackberries are suddenly a bit more humble. Oh, the shame of it all when people like that have to resort to the self-serve line at the gas station, especially when they're used to being waited on hand and foot. But like I said, things always come to Latin America a bit late, and it looks like the economic crash has definitely landed. And it's knocked a few of these local blue bloods down a few notches, that's for sure, which raises the snicker factor for most of us expats. And also, I'm noticing in the checkout lines that these days, more and more people's credit cards are being rejected. You know what I'm talking about, that always embarrassing situation when the checkout person says, "Sorry, but your credit card's just not going through." And then, of course, you shrink a little bit, pull out another, and hope nobody was watching. And then you mumble a lame excuse and blame it on the bank so you don't look like a deadbeat. I mean, haven't we all been there at least once? And you know what else I've been hearing lately? That in many high-level circles, bodyguards are being laid off. And that's just the opposite of the norm down here, where thieving politicians and people in the higher classes have always believed that the more bodyguards, the better, since having bodyguards is such a status symbol down here. So when you do lay one off, that proves that somebody's fortunes have taken a big step in reverse, because the rich people down here would rather sell off their firstborn than lay off a bodyguard, believe me. But like I mentioned in a past show, firing or laying off a bodyguard is not recommended. Since a bodyguard knows practically every move you make and where all the goods are in your house and the whereabouts of your kids and all the places they go, as well as their wealthy friends and their schedules too. So basically, everybody in that socioeconomic group knows that it's not a good idea to piss off your bodyguard. And that's why bodyguards, usually ex-bodyguards, are almost always involved in kidnapping and robbery attempts. But that shouldn't concern you expats or expat wannabes too much, since such a small percentage of expats ever end up getting bodyguards. Though one expat friend of mine, a case in point, does have bodyguards. But it's obvious he's just not happy about it. But that's another story, and I hope to tell more of it in a future show. So anyway, the point is, the financial crisis has hit down here. And that includes the banking sector, which always seems to be in a crisis anyway. So that's nothing new. And predictably, just like in the first world, it's starting to hammer the real estate sector. And the unemployment numbers are going through the ceiling. And you can prove that very easily yourself by walking through any of the big new commercial malls that have popped up in the last 5 years. Most of them first world in every way, good and bad. Including the fact that about every fourth or fifth store is vacant, which, like in the first world, is not a good sign at all. The fact is, because malls are generally bank-financed, the owners have a hard time making their payments when they have low occupancy rates like that. So down here, like in the first world, many hundreds, if not thousands, of these malls are technically in default. And when occupancy rates start falling like that, it leads to a domino of negative effects, Like, for example, when there's a lot of empty floor space, the mall has less appeal, so it gets less traffic. The existing renters, seeing that traffic is down and sales are down, they start asking for rent rebates and make noises about moving out themselves. Then the mall operator starts laying off maintenance and security people because their income is down. Then the whole place starts looking a little grungy and ragged around the edges. You know what I'm talking about. You've seen it happen up in the first world, haven't you? All right, enough said about that. Now I want to talk just a little bit about some of the emails I've been getting. And a good percentage of the emails are asking the general question, what is the best country to come down and live in? Now, I'm asking you folks, please, when you formulate a question like that, you have to be a little more specific. For example, what are you asking? What's the best country for starting your own business? The best country to get a job working for someone else? The best country for the climate? The best country for sheer beauty? The best country for backpacking or mountain climbing? The best country to find love and romance? The best country for water sports? For protection against catastrophe? To live dirt cheap? To live secure? To raise kids? The best country for sport fishing or diving or starting a farm? So you can see that for me, answering a question like, what's the best country to live in? It's almost impossible. It's like somebody asking the general question, what car is the best car to buy? Or what school should you send your kids to? Try that one on for size. The point is, you have to really narrow it down. And then I can narrow it down to a few likely suspects. Otherwise, you might as well put up a map of Latin America and throw a dart at it. Okay, enough about that. People have been asking me if I have a Facebook page. Well, I finally made one. So if you want to be my friend on Facebook or my Facebook enemy, do they have Facebook enemies? They should. Well, there's an idea now. How about it? Anyway, as of right now, I'm on Facebook and Twitter, and I don't have any friends yet. So, if you want to be the first, stop on by. Just look me up on a Facebook or Twitter search. That's John Mueller, M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and we'll take it from there. Now, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but just one more thing about expats who want to come down here and teach, because I've been getting a lot of emails on that subject. Now, one thing I just may have mentioned in passing is that every Latin American country's business sector has a disproportionate amount of non-native Oriental owners and operators, with the Chinese and the South Koreans making up the vast majority of those Oriental owners. Not to mention there's a pretty large percentage of expat Indians owning businesses down here. And by that I mean people from India. In fact, the most stark example of that Oriental ownership is in the country of Belize, where you'll see a huge percentage of hotels and dry cleaners and supermarkets and restaurants, which in a roundabout way opens up huge opportunities for any expat that comes down here who happens to know one of the Chinese dialects or the Korean language. And in that case, not only will you be able to walk right into one of the private schools and get a job on the spot, you might even want to ask for a very big raise in salary and you'll probably get it. Because the fact is, many of the large labor-intensive businesses down here, the so-called maquilas, where they assemble clothing and textiles for export to the first world, you know, the so-called sweatshops you often hear about in the news. The ones that Kathy Gifford and Puff Daddy made famous. You remember that? Anyway, the majority of the owners down here are Korean or Chinese. And I learned from an expat friend of mine down here who is a liaison between the garment industry buyers and producers in New York and the maquila textile factories down here. Well, he assured me, and he actually laughed about it, when he said that the Oriental owners don't know much Spanish at all, and when they do try to speak it, he has to bite his lip to try not to laugh. And then he told me that there's really a dire need for trilingual people, people who can speak Spanish, English, and either Chinese or Korean. And because the Chinese especially, and not just the ones in the maquila business, have been coming down here and buying land hand over fist and building factories, which means there's a dire need for them to communicate in Spanish. And everybody that deals with the Chinese in these kind of businesses down here knows that there's a big communication problem. And if you have those bilingual skills, you're pretty much guaranteed a spot in middle or upper management in one of those companies. And for that reason, nearly all of the private schools down here are trying to recruit teachers with those kind of skills. And even though they're trying to gear up for the future, so far, the recruitment efforts just aren't very successful. So if you're an expat or an expat wannabe and are thinking about coming down here, and if you're lucky enough to know some Chinese or Korean, just remember, down here there's an employment door that's wide open for you. Just thought I'd mention that, even though personally I've never met a North American or a European who fit the bill. But they're out there, all right. I got a few emails from some of those guys. And since this is the Expat Files, and you've asked me to talk about job opportunities, I thought I'd mention it. So there it is. In fact, it's one of the few jobs down here where you can work for somebody else and actually pull down a first world salary. That is, your job skills would be so valuable that you pretty much could name your price. Now, like I said before, as far as making a real decent first world style salary, let's say anywhere from $40,000 to $100,000 a year, well, I can tell you right now, it's nearly impossible to make that kind of money working for somebody else. But you can make that kind of money if you have your own business. I see expats do that all the time. But then I get emails saying, well, what about working for first world transnational companies that have set up shop in all the countries down in Latin America, like Apple and Microsoft and Walmart and Office Depot and Diesel and Guess and Starbucks and McDonald's and Citibank and Price Waterhouse and Mercedes-Benz and Toyota. I could go on and on. Well, sure, all those companies do exist down here. And if you walk into any one of them, it's exactly like walking into the very same branch of the company up in the first world. But 95 to 98% of all the employees at Walmart or Microsoft or wherever, even the ones in middle and upper management, are making third world wages. Even the professionals like accountants and engineers and lawyers and technicians and laboratory personnel and quality control people, they're all making third world salaries. For example, a certified public accountant up in the first world probably makes from $50,000 to $120,000 a year in a middle management position in a company like Walmart up in the first world. Whereas in the third world, a guy with exactly those same qualifications working in a transnational company down here might only make from $12,000 to $25,000 a year, which, believe me, by Latin American standards, puts you squarely in the upper middle class bracket and pretty much on poverty row if you're used to living in the first world. Sure, there's always that 2% of the upper management in a transnational corporation down here who actually make equivalent first world salaries. And that's because they were recruited up north and brought down to fill a special position. But even if you have all the right qualifications and come down thinking you're going to set the world on fire, you're never going to walk into that upper 2% position like that, even though you have the advantage of being a first world gringo or European. And even if you speak very good Spanish, the only way you're going to get a first world salary down here is if they recruit you to come down while you're still living up in the United States or Europe. Now, those kind of jobs are available if you look in the back of the Wall Street Journal or the Financial Times or Business Week or The Economist or Forbes magazine, in the back in their classified and help wanted ads. You'll see how they recruit first world people with certain skills, engineers and MBAs, etc. And they'll pay you big first world salaries to come down and work in the third world for a certain period of time under contract. But those are in no way your typical expat jobs, believe me. And if you do happen to get recruited in a job like that, when you come down, you'll not be living like your average expat. Instead, you'll more than likely be living a protected first world style life, isolated pretty much from the average guy on the street. And your new third world friends and associates are going to be from your own transnational company and from your new country's upper classes. Your new friends will be embassy types, diplomats, and the local corrupt politicians. In fact, Latin politicians are always sucking up the transnational executive types. And they'll be right there to bend the law for your company as long as you come up with the proper gift, if you know what I mean. Because that's the way the big boys do business down here. So all you expat wannabes out there, getting a job like that down here with first world pay, along with some certain special backroom perks that people don't want to talk about, is pretty much like winning the lottery. And in fact, in those kind of jobs, most times they pay you much better than regular first world pay, since it takes a lot to lure a first world guy down with great credentials to a third world country that he's heard a lot of terrible things about, like drug trafficking, kidnappings, rotten infrastructure, corrupt cops, uncontrolled violence, and random shootings. So the bottom line is, any of you expat wannabes out there who are under the delusion that just because you have an MBA or a degree in geology, you're going to come down here and get a job with Nestle or an oil company and get a big first world salary and live like a king in a tropical paradise. Well, sorry. If you think like that, you're better off playing the New Jersey lottery. And on another email subject, after I did that show about pharmacies down here, and when I mentioned you could get just about anything without a prescription, and if you buy anything generic, it's absolutely dirt cheap, at least half again as cheap as any generic up in the first world. Anyway, people started asking me how they could get that stuff down here and have it sent somehow up to the first world. And I know we're all trying to save a buck, especially these days, with the super high cost of medicine up in the first world. But let me point out, if someone has figured out a way to do that, they'd be doing it already, really. And you'd be able to buy that stuff on the internet or on somebody's website. But to me, and almost every expat down here, it looks to us like you'd be breaking a lot of laws if you tried that. Though probably not any laws down here. And if you were, they don't enforce them, so it wouldn't matter. But I'm sure if you tried to send some controlled substances or specific medications that required a prescription up in the first world, you'd be breaking a lot of laws. So my advice is don't even think about it. So if you want to take advantage of the fact that you don't need a prescription and you get tremendous discounts down here, you just have to take a trip down and see what I mean. And another thing, since everybody knows that Latin America is the land of the narcos and of pirated clothes, CDs, and software, believe me, if you send anything through the mail up north, and it has a postmark from any one of the 20 Latin American countries, it's going to get picked over by the customs people on the U.S. or European side with a fine-tooth comb. So there's another good reason not to try it. And now I want to talk about another interesting email question that I just received. It's from a person who just got back from vacationing in Mexico, and she said she couldn't believe how fat the Mexican people have gotten as compared to visiting the same place in Mexico some 20 years ago. And she's stumped and wondering just what happened to these people since they seem to be on the same diet. The frijoles, the rice, the chicken, the tortillas, the same old things they were eating back 20 years ago when she visited. Are they just eating more of everything? Well, part of the answer can be explained by just observing. Just look at the typical breakfast the common man eats in Mexico, or for that matter, in Latin America in general. And you'll see it's just loaded with grease. In fact, if you just look at the plate, many times their eggs are actually floating in a bed of clear grease. And of course, they add grease to everything, including the frijoles. And look at those nacho chips. They're absolutely saturated with fat. And they eat those things at practically every meal. And in fact, in Mexico, 7 out of 10 adults are overweight. And 3 out of 10, that's 30%, are, according to the World Health Organization, clinically obese. And the obesity figure includes both adults and children, which means they weigh at least 20% more than the recommended weight of an average person with the same height and body style. And there are a lot of reasons why the Latins are getting so fat. And one small reason is because at nearly every meal, they eat this stuff called pan dulce, which is in fact bread sweetened with loads of sugar, which to us expats looks something like a big crispy sugar cookie. And since pan dulce is a staple at practically every meal, it's just another load of empty carbs with no nutritional value whatsoever. And add that to the fact that one of their favorite snack foods is chicharrones, which to most expats seem pretty disgusting because what they are is pieces of pig fat cut in thin strips and fried until they're full of air bubbles and airy light, kind of like deformed Cheetos without the artificial orange color. And speaking of pork fat, they use a little dab of that in practically everything they cook, too. So by now you gotta be figuring the common Mexican has a terrible diet. Well, you should know that already by visiting a Mexican restaurant up in the States. I dare you to tell me 3 things on the menu that are actually good for you. And that's true pretty much throughout all of Latin America. But here's something that me and a lot of expats think really contributes to that obesity problem. And as a secondary effect, contributes greatly to the exploding diabetes problem down here. And speaking of diabetes, in Mexico, it's the number 2 cause of death and the number 1 cause for being admitted into the hospital. Now that's scary. So why do you think diabetes is completely out of control down here? Well, I'll give you a little hint. Everybody's addicted to Kool-Aid style drinks. That is, if the people can't afford a soft drink, like Coca-Cola or Pepsi or one of their cheaper clones, which in themselves are terrible for you because each bottle has at least 10 spoons of sugar in it. Think about that the next time you drink a Pepsi or a Coke. And because most Latin Americans can't afford to drink Coca-Cola like water, as people in the first world do, they buy a much cheaper sweetened drink, grape, cherry, orange, or whatever, that's just pretty much Kool-Aid. The fact is, they buy that stuff because it's cheap, and because they've got a terrific sweet tooth that they've been nurturing practically since they were born. And the labels on that stuff they buy are totally misleading. It says orange, grape, or cherry juice, but there's not a trace of the real thing. Believe me. And it's all about the money, really. Which reminds me of another strange custom the Latins have. Down here, you can have your soft drinks two ways, with the bottle or without. If you want it in the bottle, that's fine. But if you want it without the bottle, they pour it into a clear plastic sandwich bag, stick a straw in it, and charge you 10 cents less. Because the bottles always have some value, whether they're plastic or glass. So any day of the week when you're driving around at lunchtime, and you happen to see a group of workers or kids sitting around a corner and eating their lunch, just look at what they're drinking out of. Half the time, they'll be sucking on a sandwich bag with a straw sticking out of it. And to every expat at first, it looks rather funny. Because in fact, you'll never see that up in the first world. I mean, who would transfer their Coke to a plastic bag to save 10 cents? But down here, every dime counts. But the point is, people are absolutely 100% addicted to sugar down here. In ways you almost can't imagine up north. Just ask any dentist. I've asked. And they all agreed that there isn't a 10-year-old kid down here that isn't running around with a mouthful of cavities or fillings. The fact is, under other circumstances, this place would be a dentist's dream. Except for the fact that the society's broke and always in crisis mode, so the dentists have a real hard time getting paid. And sure, down here, the people are absolutely crazy about places like McDonald's and Wendy's and Burger King too. But because half the people down here live on $2 a day or less, it's more like a treat to go to one of those fast food restaurants, which means it's a once a week or maybe even a once a month affair. And an evening at McDonald's or Wendy's or Burger King is considered an actual bona fide date when a guy takes out his girlfriend. Try pulling a stunt like that with your girlfriend up in the first world and see how far that gets you. So a Big Mac or a Whopper combo is not an everyday affair, or in fact, just plain lunch, like it is for so many millions of people up in the first world. So it's really hard to put a lot of the obesity blame on fast food restaurants that made it down here from the first world. Oh, they love the stuff all right, but they just don't have the opportunity or the cash to eat it that much. Though it's true, if the Latins had the money, they'd all be eating that stuff every day, just like people in the first world. And in fact, just for comparison's sake, I read lately that Mexico has the second fattest population in the world. And first place is shared by Australia and the United States. And those are the solid facts, at least in the study that I just read. But with those top three obesity honors shifting all the time, the next article you read might put Mexico at number one, two, or three. Who knows? And here's another thing. If you hang around Latin people long enough, you'll notice that they absolutely love mayonnaise and put it on everything. In other words, mayonnaise is their ketchup. In fact, if you think that that wonderfully tasty guacamole on your lunch plate is just a bunch of fresh avocados mixed up with some spices, you're wrong. It's about half mayonnaise. And in fact, the quality of the mayonnaise down here is worse than you think. Of course, the main ingredients are supposed to be eggs and vegetable oil. But the thing is, in the last 20 years, Latin America has switched to the cheapest of all vegetable oils, palm and corn oil. And of course, those two are considered the most unhealthy of vegetable oils too. And here's something to note. Before 20 or 25 years ago, the vegetable oil of choice was actually coconut oil throughout the Caribbean and Latin America. Because coconut palms grew practically everywhere down here. But unfortunately, that's just not the case anymore. But when coconuts were plentiful, it was everybody's favorite lotion and cooking oil. And it's easy enough to extract. You don't need any special machinery. Just a few coconut palms, some pots, some utensils, and some elbow grease. In fact, if you go to any of the smaller towns on the Atlantic coast, or visit any of the small towns in the Caribbean islands, you'll often see older ladies sitting at the side of the road with their friends in a little kiosk selling 100% pure coconut oil that they made themselves. The same way it was made throughout the Caribbean and Latin America for hundreds of years. And if you've been paying attention to Gary Null's shows on PRN, you'll know that contrary to popular rumor, coconut oil is one of the absolute best oils for a person to eat. Even though to the uninformed, it has a bad rap that it never deserved at all. But in the last quarter century, since the big palm oil and corn oil refineries came in down here, practically no one buys or makes coconut oil anymore because it's just too expensive and labor-intensive. In fact, these days, a gallon of 100% pure coconut oil bought from these individual ladies who make that stuff by hand costs anywhere from $30 to $50 a gallon. Whereas a gallon of cheap processed corn or palm oil only costs about 10 bucks. Or even less. So naturally, since these populations are quite poor, the cheap junk is always the oil of choice. So expats, you should know that if you buy any baked goods at all down here, or you go to a restaurant, you're going to be getting cheap Brand X cooking oil, whether you like it or not. And that's just the way it is. Unless it specifically says on the menu, like in any decent Italian restaurant anyway, that they use only olive oil. And even so, you can't always trust them. So coconut oil has pretty much disappeared off the menu down here. And that means so did its excellent health benefits, including the fact that many studies show that Caribbean islanders who once used coconut oil every day as a staple in their diet were rarely obese. Well, if you've been on an island vacation lately, you'll know what I'm talking about. Nowadays, obesity is an epidemic there too. And you might be wondering why these older ladies continue to set up their roadside stands and sell their pints and quarts of 100% coconut oil, even if it is very expensive. Well, that's because they market it like a suntan oil and a protective soothing skin lotion. They know tourists are always looking for locally made souvenirs, and they've figured a way to sell it. Because every tourist knows, especially the ladies, that those expensive suntan lotions like Hawaiian Tropic are mostly coconut oil. And it says so right on the bottle. Now, these ladies generally don't market it as a food product, but rather a suntan oil. They found it's easier to sell that way. So the fact of the matter is, the Latins and the Caribbean islanders should never have switched over to palm oil and corn oil, but it's too late now. Pure coconut oil, which appears to have been a great help in preventing obesity, has become an expensive product stocked in the kitchens of good chefs. Because there's certain recipes that absolutely require it. But you just don't find it in Latin American kitchens anymore. But you do find jugs of that cheap refined palm oil everywhere. And the Latins pour it on just about everything. Add that to the fact that it's a margarine society. Butter, of course, is way too expensive when the average guy makes $300 or $400 a month. And think about this for a second. The average Latin buys the absolute cheapest cut of meat. That is, when they can't afford chicken, or there isn't one in the driveway to kill. Personally, I've been at many a house and dinner party where they've served the guests a Latin variation of bologna, hot dog, and ham loaf. That's what you'll find on everyone's dinner table down here. So the real question is not why or how so many Latin Americans are obese. The question is, why isn't everyone obese? Especially when you stop and consider that the average person's diet down here consists mainly of colored sugar water, sugar bread, everything else cooked or fried in refined corn and palm oil, processed lunch meat, tortillas, frijoles, and mayonnaise. You know what? That sounds a lot like the public school lunch program when I was a kid. Yummy.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America. TheExpatFiles@gmail.com. That's TheExpatFiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
South of the border.